9:30. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. 4. The word sudracha used in this verse is very significant, and we should understand it properly. When living in his condition, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional and the other is constitutional. As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, certainly there are different activities, even for the devotees, in connection with the conditional life. And such activities are called conditional. Besides these, the living entity, who is fully conscious of his spiritual nature and is engaged in devotional service, or in Krishna consciousness for the devotional service of the Lord, has activities which are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position, and they are technically called devotional service. Now, in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another. But then again, sometimes these activities become opposed to one another. As far as possible, the devotee is very cautious, so he does not do anything to disrupt this wholesome condition. He knows that perfection in his activities depends on his progressive realization of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, however, it may be seen that a person in Krishna consciousness commits some act which may be taken as most abominable socially or politically, but such a temporary fall down does not disqualify him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that if a person falls down but is wholeheartedly engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord, being situated within his heart, purifies him and excuses him from that abomination. The material contamination is so strong that even a yogi fully engaged in the service of the Lord sometimes becomes ensnared. But Krishna consciousness is so strong that an occasional fall down is at once rectified. Therefore, the process of devotional service is always a success. No one should deride a devotee for some accidental fall down in the ideal path. For as explained in the next verse, such occasional fall downs will be stopped in due course as soon as the devotee is completely situated in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person is situated in Krishna consciousness and is engaged with determination in the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be considered to be in the transcendental position, even if by chance or accident he is found to have fallen. The words Sado Eva, he is saintly, are very emphatic. Here are warning to the non-devotees that because of an accidental fall down, the devotee should not be derided. He should still be considered saintly, even if he has accidentally fallen down. And the word mantavya is still more emphatic. If one doesn't follow this rule and derides the devotee for his accidental fall down, then one is disobeying the order of the Supreme Lord. The only qualification of the devotee is to be unflinchingly and exclusively engaged in devotional service. In the Nrisimha Purana, the following statement is given. Bhagavati Chahara Ananya Cheta Vishwanayopi Rajata Anusha Ahisha Shah Kalisa Shadi Kapachit Mira Baba Tamir Parabhavatam. Meaning is that if one is fully engaged in devotional service, that even if one is fully engaged in devotional service, the Lord is sometimes found engaged in the abominable activities, his activities should be considered to be like spots that resemble the marks of a rabbit on the moon. Such spots do not become an impediment to the diffusion of moonlight. Similarly, the accidental fall down of a devotee from the path of saintly character does not make him abominable. On the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to acts that due to the strong power of material connections. Devotional service is more or less the declaration of war against the illusory energy. As long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusory energy, there may be accidental fall downs. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subject to such fall downs, as previously explained. No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think he is still a devotee. Who does not improve in his character by devotional service, that is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. Nice to be back here in Newcastle again. It's my last visit this year because it's getting cold. I hope to return to Florida by this time in the next month. But it's been nice. This will be like maybe 7 or 8 weeks, I think, this year. Yeah, I'll try to stay longer. So, this verse Prabhupada spoke on from time to time. And it's an important verse because it gives some understanding how dear the devotees are to Krishna and how we have to treat them very nicely. Because Krishna has great love and respect for them. So much so, he says even if a devotee really makes a big mistake, still you shouldn't criticize him. So, there's all kinds of different topics that you can talk about based on this verse and the purpose by Srila Prabhupada. We can talk about why the devotees are very dear to Krishna. Krishna is a very loving person, and his devotees, he talks actually in the previous verse, 29, that he is equal to everyone, but if somebody gives him special attention, he reciprocates. Because in the previous verse, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. Whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend. So anyone who renders service to Krishna becomes Krishna's friend. And Krishna loves his friends more than he loves himself. He's a very loving personality. And he has a great affection for people who become his friends. And therefore, if we cause trouble or criticize somebody who's a devotee, then get in trouble with Krishna. And so, another thing is that the devotees are very rare. In an earlier verse, Krishna it says, Manushya nam sahasreshu kaschidyadati sadeyadeha opposite of kaschidyam veditaktaha. Out of thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who achieve perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So the people who know Krishna in truth are these devotees. So they're very rare. Because if one in a thousand may try for perfection. And of those who achieve perfection, not everyone who tries for perfection attains perfection. And then of those who achieve perfection, one who actually has love for Krishna, that's very rare. Prabhupada explained in that report that the perfection is to understand that one is a soul and not a body, to be a realized soul. And then of those people who realize that they're not the body, actually act on that platform, of those, very few. Devotees of Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna. And another reason why Krishna doesn't take seriously if the devotee slips up is because he knows how powerful devotional service is. Devotional service is so powerful. Actually, there's one verse I was just, you know, when I was studying this from, just remember the number, P, 436. Like Akhi Shet. No. It's, videos of Rabbi Shalasan. Let's see. Yapi Abhija Asi Papevya. Sarvevya Papa Kritana. Sarva Gyana Paninaya. Vijanam Santarishasi. Even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, and you are situated in both camps of knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of millions. So, this devotional service is so powerful. Even if one has been a rascal for a very long time, if they engage in devotional service, they can be completely pure. That's the power of devotional service. Actually, there's a verse glorifying the holy name. Sanketan Parihasan Va, Stobinam Helman Eva Bhava, Kumpinam Gwanam Asheshaga, Haram Vidu. That if you chant the holy name to indicate something else, if you chant the holy name jokingly, if you chant the holy name for musical entertainment, and if you chant the holy name even in criticism, still you are freed from unlimited volumes of sympathy. This is known to all Buddhist men. So the devotee, every day he's chanting so many Hare Krishnas. So he's becoming very, very, very pure by the Srimadas of Krishna. And therefore, even if he does something that's really bad, it's completely eradicated by the power of the devotional service. And Krishna knows the power of the devotional service. But the neophyte devotee and the non-devotee, they don't know the power of the devotional service. They don't see how pure this person is becoming by the chanting. They see he does something wrong, and they call that rascal really bad. You know, please. I thought he was such a nice guy, but now I can see he's really corrupt, you know. And things like that happen. People render so much nice devotional service, they make one mistake, and then all of a sudden they go all out and criticize them when they actually only did one thing wrong. And that thing is very, very insignificant compared to all the devotional service that they have done in the past and will do in the future. And so, there's a nice analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives in this connection, which I think is very, very illustrative, and that's the analogy of the shower. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described this process of chanting as chaito dharma marjana. It cleanses the mirror of the mind. So our mind is becoming clean by this chanting. So Prabhupada said it's like a person engaged in devotional service is like a person who's in the shower. So if a person is in the shower, they still may have some dirt on their body. Right? But if you criticize somebody who's in the shower for being dirty, right, that's very foolish. Right? Because very, very soon, the shower will be complete and they will be clean. So a person engaged in devotional service is exactly like a person in the shower. If you point out some material tendency in that person, that's foolish because just in a very short time they'll be completely free of the power of the devotional service. One reason that it's hard for us to see is we tend to just think about this life. And even within this life, we just think about this present circumstance, this fall, or this year, or this month, or this week, or this day, or this hour. We tend to be very focused. But Krishna has seen us for thousands and thousands of lives. And if it takes us 20 years to become a pure devotee, or the whole rest of our life to become a pure devotee, or three lives to become a pure devotee, it's nothing compared the thousands of lives Krishna's been writing, watching this rot in this world. It's like, it's just like that. But from his point of view, but we tend to be bogged down in our material consciousness, and we don't think how fast we're becoming purified from the point of view of eternal time. So then the question might be asked, why do we criticize people who are engaged in devotional service when they slip up? There's different reasons. One thing is, in this age of Kali, people are very much influenced by the mode of ignorance. Basically, in the mode of ignorance, you spontaneously feel like doing a thing that's just the opposite of what you're supposed to do. If you're supposed to avoid such activity, you're enthusiastic about such activity. If you're supposed to chant the name of God, you don't care about the name of God. If you're supposed to respect people, disrespect them. That's just how the tendency is in this age. So, of course, one reason that we criticize people is that we're thinking within our mind in a critical way, and it just comes out through our speech. So the way we can avoid criticizing people is to avoid thinking of them in a negative way. Think about people in the positive. So if the people are engaged in devotional service, it's very easy to think about them in a positive way, because they're doing so many auspicious spiritual activities. They chant the holy name of the Lord, they offer their food to the Lord, they bow down to the Lord. They do so many spiritual activities. So if we become accustomed to thinking of the devotees in terms of the wonderful spiritual activities that they do, then we'll be thinking good things about them, and we'll be inclined to say good things about them when we see them. Okay, oh yes, so and so sings so nicely, so and so cooks so nicely for the deity, so and so arranges the flowers so nicely for the altar. But we'll think in terms of their positive emotional service, and we'll be inclined to praise them for their service rather than just better mind, sort of spontaneously think whatever it does according to the three modes of material nature. We're practicing here yoga, bhakti yoga. Yoga means control of the mind. So we're not really supposed to let our mind just wander and contemplate according to our material condition, but we're actually supposed to be thinking in terms of the vision that we're given in the Bhagavad Gita. That's why we study the scripture. Krishna's revealing how he sees the world in Bhagavad Gita. And as his aspiring devotees, we're supposed to see the world in the same way. So the prominent thing about the souls in this world is their spiritual identity. It's not the material body. That's stressed again and again. Actually, it's described that the vision of the person in the mode of goodness is to see the spiritual essence behind everything. And the person in the mode of passion is to get bogged down with the differences in the temporary coverings. It's a nice stuff. Krishna describes that knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, although they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand it in the mode of goodness. That knowledge by which one sees in every different body there's a different type of living entity, you should understand it in the mode of passion. So somebody who's advancing devotional service, they see the spiritual essence everywhere. They don't see in terms of somebody's material qualities, so they see in terms of their relationship with Krishna. And so in this world, we are actually pure souls, but we're covered by the material qualities. And as we practice the devotional service, our spiritual qualities actually become manifest. So those who are advanced spiritualists, they see how our dormant spiritual qualities are becoming manifest. And they become enlivened, seeing how the devotees are developing the same qualities. There's a nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that lists the 26 qualities of the devotee. And Prabhupada mentions these qualities in one purport from the Bhagavatam. The qualities of the devotee in 26 and number are listed as follows. 1. Kind to everyone. 2. Does not quarrel with anyone. 3. Fixed in the absolute truth. 4. Equal to everyone. 5. False. 6. Charitable. 7. Mild. 8. Clean. 9. Simple. 10. Benevolent. 11. Peaceful. 12. Completely attached to Krishna. 13. Has no material hankering. 14. Meek. 15. Steady. 16. Self-controlled. 17. Does not eat more than required. 18. Sane. 19. Respectful. 20. Humble. 21. Brave. 22. Compassionate. 23. Friendly. 24. Poetic. 25. Expert. 26. Silent. That means he doesn't talk about things irrelevant to spiritual development. Not that he takes a vow of professional silence. So the one who's advanced in spiritual consciousness sees these qualities gradually becoming manifest as the devotees advance in devotional service. And he becomes enlivened seeing this. And the things that obscure them on material covings he considers insignificant and something that will pass in the course of time as the devotional service increases. Therefore, he's not inclined to focus on the material qualities which are diminishing, but rather on the spiritual qualities which are increasing. Now, there's different instructions given to about dealing with devotees so that we don't disrespect them. These particularly are mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction, Upadesh Amrita. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. So, even if somebody doesn't do any other particular devotional service, if they just chant the name of Krishna, we should think this person is good because they've chanted the name of Krishna. Actually, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a place where some householders from a particular town are asking Lord Chaitanya how did they advance on me. And Lord Chaitanya says you should chant the holy name and you should serve the Vaishnavas. So then they ask, who's a Vaishnava? And Lord Chaitanya says, anyone who's once chanted the name of Krishna is a Vaishnava. That's a pretty liberal definition. So, even we encounter in the streets of Newcastle some people like that. Even today, a few people said, Hare Krishna. So one should then honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshiping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in unmediating devotional service, and whose heart is completely void of the propensity to criticize others. So that's an interesting point, that characteristic of the pure devotee is mentioned, that he doesn't have any interest in criticizing others. There's different reasons for that. One is he's completely satisfied in devotional service. And therefore he doesn't need to show himself as being superior to somebody else for any particular reason. Which is one reason why people criticize people. And another reason he doesn't criticize people is out of his humility, he sees other people as more advanced than himself. Because how does he see other people more advanced than himself? Because he looks at the good qualities in other people and he looks at the bad qualities in himself. He thinks, I have all these bad qualities and they have all these good qualities. How can I criticize them? So. Then another nice verse in that connection with the previous verse in the Upadeshana says, the different activities that we can engage in with the devotees to improve our relationships with them. It's called the six exchanges of love shared by the devotees. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, acquiring confidentiality, accepting prasad, offering prasad, are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. So these are very practical things that we can do to develop relationships with devotees. Everyone appreciates it when you give them prasad. Rohit and Mr. Malikor were saying there it was a friend of theirs who was having a birthday, so I said, well, you should take some halwa for them. That would be very nice for them, some prasad. So that's something very simple we can do for his prasad. So give people prasad, and then we accept the prasad and they give us. Maybe it's like we have a certain diet that we would prefer and they give us something not really compatible with it. But, so we don't say, I don't like that kind of food. It's not good for me. It's bad. No, we think, this person's giving us this. Thank you so much. I'm so happy. And we appreciate the gift. So, we took out some prasad yesterday and right now. It was very nice when the people accepted it. Some people were there afraid to accept it. but they missed out. They missed out on the exchange, the opportunity for the exchange of love. And then the other things are revealing one's mind in confidence. So the thing is that in regards to the devotional service, we may have some difficulties. And that we're confronting. So if we can tell some other devotee about this, they can give us ideas to get beyond it. We don't need somebody that we can trust who will give us good advice and won't tell everybody about our problems. Because then, basically, we're generally all alone to deal with our mind. And sometimes the mind is very powerful and surpasses our intelligence. But if we take intelligence from another devotee, it can give us advice to accompany this. Because he could have had the same problems in the past and got beyond it. Acquiring confidentially, we can inquire from the other devotees how we become more attached to the devotional service, how we can increase our focus. Offering gifts and accepting gifts, and it's always nice to give people gifts. One time I was on a Polish tour and I was telling my friends how I had like 3 tubes of neem toothpaste because I decided I would stock up when I was in India because it's a lot cheaper to buy it in India. So I was mentioning to one of this devotee, he was the indigenous Swami's servant, and it turned out somehow or other indigenous Swami had become separated from his toothpaste in the course of time. Maybe it was left at the previous place or he ran out, so he didn't have any toothpaste. So the servant asked Gopam if I could donate one of the tubes of toothpaste to indigenous Swami. So I said, yeah, so I brought it in personally. And he says, oh, this is the best present you've ever given me. It was so funny, you know, such an advanced person. That's indigenous Swami said, it's the best present you've ever given me. And he said, the best present is not the thing that's most valuable, but the thing that's actually needed. So you can think of something somebody actually needs and give it to them. So these different exchanges, they nurture the love between the devotees. Another topic related to this is, well, suppose people criticize us, how can we react to it? One thing is, suppose they criticize us erroneously. You know, they say that we did something that we didn't do. Or then in one sense, it's not our problem, it's their problem. I know what I did, Krishna knows what I did. So, you know, Krishna is the person who awards the punishments for the offenses. He knows I didn't do it. I know I didn't do it. This guy here is dreaming up some illusory problem. Why should I worry about it? So, in the one sense, it's not my problem. Somebody's an illusion about what I did or didn't do. It's their problem. And then if it is something, it's a real defect they found in me, then if I'm trying to become a pure devotee who's free from all material qualities, and somebody points out a material quality in me, then actually they're doing me a favor because they're showing me what I have to work on. They're showing me, oh, I still have some material quality that I have to get beyond in order to attain pure devotional status. So actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he considered that the persons who criticized him were actually his friends. And the people who praised him were his enemies. Because if they criticized him, then he knows what he should have. We should work on to improve character. Whereas if everyone praises, you think, oh yes, I'm so great. And then you can become illusioned, thinking that you're so great. The thing is, if you think you're so great, then you think you can do nothing wrong. And as soon as you think you can do nothing wrong, then you start doing all kinds of things wrong. So actually, the people who criticize us, they're actually helping us to become humble and pointing out where we can improve our devotional service. So then actually they're doing this at the end. So then we can see, so-and-so is actually doing the favor. That this actually came out in the Govardhan Hill pastime is coming up very soon, in the next month. And there, After Indra is chastised by Krishna, he actually understands. Actually, I was too proud, and therefore Krishna arranged this whole pastime, lifting the hill in response to me trying to drown all that madness in the valley, just to dismantle my pride. He actually understood. So. So those are a few thoughts on this side. Or there's one final poem I did want to say about the secret to avoid criticizing devotees unnecessarily, and the secret to be undisturbed when people criticize us is the same. It's Lord Chaitanya's instruction in the Shastika. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name. So, of course, this is a very famous verse. In some temples, they chant it every day before the japa. Both in some, at least in the local language. But of course, it's very hard to act this way, isn't it? To be more, to think oneself lower than the grass. To be more tolerant. To not expect any harm. And pause, prepared to give respect to others. So that means that it requires a lot of practice.
Practice.
It's easy to do that when you tend to think that very, very nice. Right. Yeah. Like recently, I've been living alone here in this temple, and it's very easy to be tolerant when you're living alone. You can think, yes, yes, I'm a very tolerant person. But then when you're, you know, traveling with somebody else, they snore, they wake up early and wake, their alarm clock wakes you up too, even though you wanted to sleep later. Then you see how tall I actually am. So the thing is that we have to practice these things. And sometimes when people criticize us, it's revealing that we aren't as tolerant and humble as we thought we were, or we might have been, because otherwise we wouldn't have got upset about it. And if we are criticizing others, it's also a reminder that, well, if I was more humble and tolerant, I wouldn't criticize them, because I would have been focusing on the quality. I was thinking that I was lower than the strong. So, in any case, it's something. Basically, these are practices of the mind. Yoga is all about controlling the mind, and this is basically our whole practice. This is the key verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given. That is to, we have to practice thinking that we're insignificant. Practice not being disturbed. So when we encounter difficult situations, it's an opportunity for us to practice silence. How can we practice silence? There's a pastime that my spiritual master, Satsripadas Goswami, talks about when he used to work for the welfare department. Sometimes his boss would be like speaking on all kinds of, he'd be angry with him or speaking all kinds of things that were irrelevant. He would just chant Hare Krishna in his mind. And he asked Prabhupada if that was all right, and Prabhupada was quite agreeable to it. But sometimes if something is really upsetting you, if something is upsetting you, you can chant Hare Krishna in your mind, and you'll find that your mind becomes more peaceful. It's very simple. So there's different. I remember I was in Mayapur, And in Mayapur, the temple is not well insulated. In fact, there's holes in the walls. And in the winter and in January, sometimes there's a breeze in the morning. So you'll be in the temple of Mangalarti and there's this cold breeze going through the temple. So I remember reading this one sloka that said that that meditation on Lord Vishnu is beyond the happiness and distress of this world. So great. I just completely absorb myself in the deity and I completely forget about how cold I am because the wind is blowing through the holes in the temple. And you actually do. You actually do forget about your external situation to the extent you're absorbed in the deity. And now I've just been in the habit of looking at the deity all the time. Sometimes people want me to dance in a circle and I get upset with them because I just want to look at the deity. Because I got used to looking at the deity when I was using my So, but by absorbing your mind in Krishna consciousness, in other words, we have to practice thinking of ourselves as insignificant. But part of the practice is to think about the significance of the other people, how the other people are significant, basically based on how they're based on their relationship with Krishna. How the devotees are very dear to Krishna. Because of whatever they're doing, whether they just come to the temple on Sunday and just bow down to the deity. How many people bow down to the deity in the castle? Not very many. How many people come to the temple on Sunday? Not very many. So they're rare souls. They're rare. And Krishna's very pleased that they made that choice to take that step directly. So I think I should end here before going too much longer. Does anybody have any questions?
It really seems to be to tolerate in detention. And what if there's an obvious, what if the devotee practices an obvious fault? Say someone like proud of their position and practice discrimination, and it's an obvious point for fault, and you're not just rejecting due to your own impurity.
No.
Like, would a devotee still be expected to be fixed in detention?
Well, there's different situations. There's everybody has a, in this kind, everyone has a superior. So if somebody's actually using their position, there's somebody above them, like the GBC is above the temple president, and the temple commander is above. I mean, the temple president is above the temple commander, and the GBC body is above an individual GBC member. So if somebody, is actually abusing their position, so that people are actually being discouraged in devotional service, because actually the goal of the leader is to inspire people in devotional service. So it's a personal difficulty is if they end up discouraging people rather than encouraging people. That can be reported to a superior person. And then from your point of view, you can tolerate it. But you can tell the people in charge. And if they don't listen, you can tell the people about them. And there's the ISKCON resolve of the mediators can be reported to. There's always, and you can also pray to the Supreme Personality of God. This can change people's hearts. So there's always some kind of recourse.
And then after some time, he realized that I need to do the work and I need to forgive. and greater than me. But still, during the time, if anyone's like me to write any of the answers in comparison to everyone I've seen it before, this is what you have to do with what you have to do. But you are being disturbed from setting the end, you know, chastising is when you talk things out here. People chastise you because they need to correct you. But when people chastise you to hurt you, this is different. And it's a little bit more difficult to forgive and apply. Because if you don't forgive, you don't correct them. So what do you do if you start to get punishment? Like, when you, it's hard for you to forgive the person who's been so deeply hurt. What do you do? You're praying to Krishna every day, and you're getting different answers, but still the heart is, you know, a little bit reluctant to completely sorry. I know this is Maya and everything, but what do you do in such a situation? You keep on praying and praying and praying and praying, okay? Or,
well, time has a healing factor. It's natural. And and we cannot always understand people's motives. We cannot like why somebody can't, why somebody doing something. Like, well, like we can think, I know why so and so did that, but we may actually do it wrong. The only person who really does, sometimes people don't even know why they're doing something. So there's only one person who knows why somebody does something, and that's Krishna. He's beyond illusion. So we can be convinced, you know. And there are, you know, there's like the people who are paranoid, who are convinced that people are out to get them, and it's all in their mind. So, you know, but, and in some circumstances, some of the people who deal with housing say you can explain to people, when you act in this way, it hurts me. And not in an accusatory way, like you're a rascal for hurting me, but just put it, you know, just describe in a rational way your position, so that they understand where you're coming from, why what they did hurt you, and then at least they have the knowledge not to hurt you anymore, because they understood how. So that's sometimes useful, but see, forgiveness is a quality of a brahmana. It's the quality of the mode of goodness. So we may not actually be in the mode of goodness. So it's very difficult to forgive. But the side effect of performing devotional service is we attain the mode of goodness. At the time, that irrevocable service is established in the heart. The effects of nature's modes of passion, ignorance, lust, desire, and hankering disappear from the heart. At that time, the devotee becomes established in goodness and he becomes happy. So the effect of hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering service to the devotees is that one rises. And it's actually very quickly you rise to the mode of goodness, but it's very quickly from Krishna's point of view. It may not be very quickly from our point of view. Especially when we're younger, we want things to happen faster. After we become older, we realize things never happen as fast as we want them to. So that's the thing, that it seems like a long time from our point of view, Krishna's point of view. We're speeding from the boat of ignorance to the boat of goodness in just one life, almost 2 or 3 lives, which is amazing. And then when we're in the mode of goodness, it's a breeze to forgive people. So that's the problem is that we tend to be conditioned by passion. And then qualities like patience, which is another quality of goodness. So like Rupa Goswami recommends enthusiasm, determination, and patience. So enthusiasm and determination have some, there can be some passion in there. But patience is purely good quality of goodness. So that's but the more we absorb our mind in Krishna, the more that the qualities of goodness will happen. And that's another secret, is that in addition to performing the devotional service with our body, we have to perform the devotional service with our mind. We have to think about Krishna with our mind. Like when we make the offering, think how we're servants of Krishna, and all these goodies that we made, or all these food stuffs that we made, or Krishna's energy, and offering Krishna's food to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. We can go through the mechanics of the offering, but if we're also at the same time meditating on ourselves as being Krishna's servants, engaging Krishna's property and Krishna's service, then we'll advance a lot faster to the qualities of the good qualities than if we just physically engage the body. It's very important to also engage the mind, but it's more difficult to engage the mind. But the yoga is complete without engaging the mind. That's the whole thing. Actually, there's that nice verse: "Smartadya satatam vishnu vishmartadya na jati vishet sarve vidhi shetra ida yor ida kuka." But one should always remember Lord Krishna. One should not forget him at any time. All the other rules, prescriptions, and prohibitions are simply servants to these two principles. So that all the physical activities and all the verbal activities that we do are actually meant to fix the mind. And the mind is fixed on Krishna, because spiritual. And therefore, the tension is recommended when we perform the devotional activities, because then the mind is fixed on Krishna, the attentiveness. And then, sooner, the more attentive we are, the more mind is absorbed in Krishna when we perform the devotional service, the faster we come to the quality of goodness. Anything else? Yes.
Many devotees and also many of the scriptures, they have a very critical judgment in various other following faiths. When you have that much of critical judgment, is that considered as a criticism? Because many devotees, when they see or when they face something, they may not vocalize their criticism, but they have inside some kind of assessment in a critical way. But do you consider that is a less tolerant or is a positive judgment?
Maybe you could give an example so it becomes more concrete to me. Example.
If I have my own devotional approach, if I listen to you or if I look at you, I tend to judge you.
It's the natural process in our mind.
Yes.
It's the natural process in our mind. And while doing that, am I criticizing you or am I judging you? Judgment and criticism, do they overlap?
Well, the thing is, due to our conditioning, right, people will do something and our mind will respond in a certain way. Now, and that may or may not be valid. But somebody who's practicing devotional service will analyze that reaction and see is it rational? Is it based on the scripture, or is it just something due to my past conditioning? Like, for example, like people have different personalities, let's say. Like some people are very peaceful, and some devotees are very, very passionate. You know? And maybe I think only people who are very peaceful are spiritual. You know? That's just my mentality. I think people are very big. And if somebody, like, you know, gets upset and speaks loudly, I think that's being very unspiritual. But that's not necessarily true. Maybe they're defending Krishna or they're defending the Vaishnava, and therefore they're speaking very impassionately. Like sometimes, Prabhupada would be defeating some impersonalist idea, and he would be very vehement, and the people were upset, thinking, how is this Prabhupada? He's supposed to be a sadhu, but he's so angry. How can he be? You know? But he was angry because these people were blaspheming Krishna. So his anger was a good thing. So maybe, suppose I was in that, so I could, maybe I too would have been upset how Prabhupada was so angry and thought that it would be spiritual. But then I could, with my intelligence, I could see, oh no, it's spiritual because he's defending Krishna. So we have to look at our reactions and our thoughts in terms of vision of Bhagavad Gita and understand whether they're emotions that'll bring us toward Krishna or bring us away. Because sometimes just we have different personalities and people will do something in a way that we can't relate to, but it doesn't mean that it's not okay in devotional service. I mean, I was traveling with someone and he didn't like to eat at night because he felt that he would be sluggish in the morning if he ate at night. And I didn't like to not eat at night because I thought I wouldn't have any energy in the morning to do my service. You know? So we have completely different philosophies, different modes of activity. But the purpose was to what was best for our devotional service. So I thought he was crazy for not eating at night because then, you know, he's looking for food in the morning when he could be chanting Japa peacefully. No, and he thought I was crazy for eating at night because, you know, I would be sluggish and wouldn't be able to function like him. But actually, we had different bodies, and both ways were all right for us because for our particular situation, we both chose the best thing for our devotional service. So we have to, we get into trouble where we feel a certain thing and we just act on that feeling. We do something and we say something when that it's just our particular condition and it has nothing to do with reality. It's just I'm conditioned in a certain way to not appreciate something. And then somebody does that, and I fight against it, whereas maybe what they're doing is perfectly okay from the emotional point of view. It's just something that I can't relate to because of the way I was brought up or the way I was, you know, the way I was conditioned in certain ways. Because different. For example, let's say, suppose there's somebody who's more Brahminical, right? He studies the books every day. And maybe somebody who's more like a Shudra, he does practical service. So that, you know, that the Brahminical person, you could criticize the Shudra. Hey, this guy isn't studying up. He's just doing work. And the Shudra asked the person to just, hey, this Brahmana is not doing anything practical, he's just reading his books, just sitting around reading his books. So they could criticize each other in that way, but actually both things are bona fide. A lot of practical service needs to be done, and a lot of people need to be enlightened with knowledge in the books. So both things are valuable. The medical work and Shudra. So it's foolish for that people to criticize each other. Better they just do their work nicely for Krishna. Is that helpful?
Yes. I was actually give the right example. But what happened, my son was a scientist, and he recently published, it was published, for Ravana's brain. And he's a neuroscientist. And he presented in the book as his consciousness is evolved. And through the process of the development of the evolution. And he has done a lot of research. I didn't agree. But his argument and his scientific basis is so strong, I couldn't get into an argument to say that it's just beyond that there is something else. Mm. I couldn't convince him.
Right.
And he has become totally silent. He thought that my saying is not acceptable at all. And I was lost whether that kind of criticism is valid or whether I should go further to go on in the argument about it in a critical way. I didn't know.
So whether you should criticize his argument. See, of course, to criticize that kind of argument, you'd have to have the same, to his satisfaction, you'd have to have the same, you know, training that he has, you know, to present the case. But the thing is, it's, I don't even think that it's, we also accept that there's an evolution of consciousness in the different life forms.
Yes.
Like the plants have less consciousness, and the animals have higher consciousness, and humans have. But that doesn't prove evolution. Because they can be created with different levels of consciousness, as they can have evolved with different levels of consciousness. Right? Krishna created them so that in such a way that more or less of their consciousness is expressed, depending on the physical form of the unity. So that's his research doesn't prove evolution, and it doesn't defeat our idea of consciousnesses. So I don't think there's any. The only thing that to get upset is if he says that this proves evolution, because it doesn't really prove evolution. It just proves that there's different degrees of consciousness in different living entities, which is also described in the Bible. There's whole progressions of different entities. The canto where the Shabadeva talks, there's these living entities and these living entities. It's like a gradation of consciousness. So the consciousness does develop over the living entities. The aquatics are the lowest, and the plants, and, you know, there's a whole. So that's, but that his mistake is saying that proves evolution. Yeah. So, but you may not be able to convince him of that. And then...
Did he say that the consciousness is not a symptom of the heart?
Yes, I mean, you can just tell them to go in the laboratory and take a bunch of chemicals and make the conscious thing, and then you'll take it serious. Okay? Right? Take whatever chemicals, any of the 92 natural elements in any proportion, mix them together and produce a conscious thing. Okay? Tell them to do that and say that if you do that, then you'll take the students very seriously. No, then nobody's happy. Nobody's free. They have faith. They have blind faith that they can do it. That's all. Nobody is taking just pure, raw material elements, mixed them in some combination, and produced a consciousness. They have faith that it's possible. But they have no reason to have the faith that it's possible. So, you just tell them to do that. Prabhupada would, you know, tell people to do things like that. It's a perfectly good argument. If you say consciousness comes from matter, then just go in the lab, take some matter, and produce consciousness. Don't say, well, if over the last few million years, consciousness evolved from matter. Well, if a certain combination of chemicals can produce consciousness, even now, then you should be able to go in the lab and make that combination and produce a conscious something. And if you can't, then you should go around saying that consciousness comes from matter because you haven't shown that it does. Just tell them that. Simple. So we'll end here. Thank you for your kind attention.